You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Reveille, reveille, donks. Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
It is Friday, September 25th, 2020, and it is time, donks, for Morning Combat. Hi, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I am from CBS Sports and Showtime and a million other places. I am joined by the gentleman who is, well, technically, you're on the other side of the screen. You're in our hearts, and you're in the room with me.
Yeah.
God damn it, Brian Campbell.
It's not where you're from, Luke. It's where you're at. Right here in the Mohegan Bubble, double Charlo pay-per-view this weekend, UFC 253 as well. What a time to be alive. What a fun week to share with you inside the hotel room, a couple beers deep with the fans, with the people, CBS Sports HQ. This has been a fantastic what a launch. What a launching pad, right?
Why are you doing the wacky morning DJ radio bit with me? Hey, everybody, I'm live on the Mohegan Flat.
Well, we're dressed up nice, and what feels like the problem, right?
Very good. But he was right. We have a lot to get to today. UFC 253, we just did a hit for that on CBS Sports HQ. There's the Charlo Brothers thing happening, oh, by the way. So we're going to dig into both of those. Obviously, at the top of the show, please do us a favor. Please like the video. Hit that subscribe button. BC, we've been doing the room service diaries. We have not been hammering the folks to hit that subscribe button. People love them, but you got to hit that subscribe button if you love them.
Because eventually we're going to get fired. So as long as this thing goes, please try to keep it going with us. All right?
We are headed towards Firesville, but can we have a comfortable ride along the way? That's all we're asking for. All right? Very good. And then, of course, if you'd like to try Showtime, you certainly may. You can go to Showtime.com and get a 30-day free trial. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, go F yourself. And then lastly, if you want some of that sweet, sweet MK merch, you can go to store.show. That's SHO.com. All right, BC, let's get right into it. Not a moment to waste. By the way, the weigh-ins for the Charlo doubleheader will be at 11 o'clock. We're going to be hosting that light right from this desk. But first, BC, we got to get to UFC 253. We've been doing a lot of Charlo coverage. Let's put it for just the moment on the back burner. Let's get right to it. They just weighed in. Paulo Costa at Fight Island making 185. Adesanya making 184, appears to be in tremendous shape. Okay, when you think about this fight, Adesanya versus Costa, what is sort of the one, I'm not storyline exactly, but when you think about the fight itself, what are you going to be paying attention to most?
Look, yeah, like obviously you love the fact that this is that rare unbeaten versus unbeaten for the championship and all the hatred and back and forth. But what you really care about is what happens when that bell rings inside the fight. And at its core, as we talked about, it's Bull versus Matador. I cannot wait to see what happens in that first round specifically, but in the early going, when Paulo Costa just puts on the I don't care what you hit me with, I'm coming forward, and comes at him. And obviously, you know, if this fight goes late, it may look a little differently. But we saw both guys against Yoel Romero, and Luke, Costa's version of the Romero fight was just banging balls to the I mean, it was fan-friggin-tastic at the core purity of who you are as an MMA fan to see something that wild. Both guys almost gassed out at the end of round one. I'm not saying it's going to look just like that because Adesanya is such a different fighter, more calculated, but Costa's going to make him fight. And at the core, that has to be the most exciting part. Obviously, we'd seen Izzy there before against Gastelum. We'd seen him against right. a guy who's going to make him pour out that jug. But look, Costa's a little bit more dangerous, certainly bigger, and the earlier he has success, the better his chances. Bull Matador, when you test the bull, be careful, you're going to get the horns. Either way, I'm horned up. I am so ready for this fight, Luke.
All right, well, you had to make it weird. It didn't take you long. Here's the thing, though. I did a podcast with the Submission Radio fellas.
Yeah, what's that guy's name?
Dennis and Casper.
Casper,
the reason I always forget slash remember Casper's name is because he spells Casper with a C.
He's a well-dressed guy in person.
Oh, buddy. The best-dressed guy in MMA media, easily. I don't think it's – well, Mel, Schmo might have something to say about that, right? Who's a better-dressed guy, Schmo or Casper? Here's the thing. Casper doesn't wear socks. Schmo wears socks. I think that's the deciding factor. Which one do you value more?
I'm more of a Casper guy, but shout out to Schmo. I don't know who's bankrolling this guy, but he's everywhere. He's everywhere.
Certainly
he's
ubiquitous. Making it happen. But they asked me a question which I thought was kind of interesting. They have heard some criticisms in their neck of the woods over in Australia, which was, well, isn't Costa a more dangerous version of Gastelum, which is to say, Gastelum was doing the one where he was slipping, coming inside. And hey, by the way, heading into the fifth round, that was 2-2. I mean, Adesanya, in the end, had that fifth round gut check moment that was incredible, but that was a very competitive fight. And my answer was, number one, I don't think Costa's going to be that competitive if it goes to the fifth. Like, I mean, he might have won the first three or something, but by round four, it's going to turn around, okay, number one. Number two, if you watch the Gastelum fight, and you were cage side for it, Adesanya did a lot of waiting for Gastelum. Not like, I'm just going to sit here and then just, you know, wait to see the whites of their eyes and then pop. But he kind of knew this guy was going to be coming into him. Let me kind of fix my position to a degree, maybe setting traps at the same time. I don't think he's going to do that with Costa, at least not to the same degree. You wait too long on that guy, and it's going to be bad news bears. He's going to roast your ribs. He's going to back you up. I think a lot of this is going to be Adesanya turning him, right? All these guys sit there, and they wait for this dude to barrel down on them. The bad stuff will happen to you. I think, as I said it on CBS Sports HQ, he's going to weaponize the forward progress against him. Here's the thing I mentioned to you, like, what were you going to be watching? Here's the thing I'm going to watch. At some point, probably several times, at a bare minimum. Let's say Adesanya has the best performance ever. At a bare minimum, Costa's going to land on him. He's going to land on him hard. What happens then? That, to me, is what I'm paying attention to.
That's what you want to find out, because Costa's proven he can get you out of there. As you mentioned, he goes so hard to the body, it wears you down. I want to see Izzy have to go through the flames. I love Adesanya's chances in round four or five if it gets there. I talked to Izzy before he left for Abu Dhabi, and I said, look, you know, you've said the things about Paulo on PEDs. You're going to knock him before USADA does all that stuff. But I said straight up, you know, do you think he can be there in rounds four and five and be fresh? And, you know, he straight up laughed and said, you know, hell no. You know, he's a fuckboy. Hell no, all that stuff. But round one through three are going to be hell. And I think when you take all things considered, their dislike for each other, the legitimate thing that in MMA, it's really hard to stay unbeaten, and it's certainly hard to make a fight with two unbeatens. And we haven't seen that in UFC in general since Joanna and Carolina 4 years ago. I just think, anticipation-wise, Luke, where do you put this fight? I mean, it's not the most anticipated fight I've ever had as a fan was the second Sun and Silva. Didn't live up to it, but you were just sort of like, can Chael do that again after just falling short?
Right.
We always say Lesnar Carwin with sort of almost a pro wrestling type build to that. This one, just in terms of maybe not as much the fanfare, but the real core of the fight, it's in my top five of most anticipated fights I've ever gotten fired up for. I mean, you know.
So I'm going to say this. For very different reasons, but, you know, you take a route one way, you take a route a different way, you end up kind of in the same position. I haven't been this interested in a fight, and as you mentioned, anticipating it, since McGregor-Khabib.
Yeah, you got to put that. If that's not in your top three, then you don't have a pulse.
And I did not think that that fight was necessarily going to be as competitive as I think this one will be. I mean, but again, who knows? We'll have to see. But that was so big, so ugly, uglier than this one, to be clear, much uglier than this one, and so, you know, just crazy. You just couldn't wait to see what the hell was going to happen when they got across from each other. This one, these two guys ran to each other in the hotel, and they were professional enough to realize, let's wait for Saturday
K-fabe
night.
K-fabe only, brother. Come on.
Well, I don't care about any of that stuff. I'm not 5 years old. But the point being is they didn't get into some kind of fisticuffs outside. It doesn't reduce my interest at all, though, to your point. Everybody I've talked to has been like, why'd they do that, bro? Because they're human adults? I don't know. So, yes, in terms of anticipation, it's pretty high. And as you mentioned, the undefeated part is really key, because it's one thing to, like, you know, I spent, you know, a few years on the regional scene. I got 12-15-0. And then you have, like, 5-6 fights in UFC, and you're really good. It's another one to be 20-0, and this is, depending on how you want to rate the interim title fights, this is either his second or third title defense for Adesanya. That is spectacular. Someone asked me a question. Let me put it to you. if Adesanya beats Costa, and let's say convincingly, third round TKO, something like that, where does that put him among all-time great middleweight champions?
That's a great question, something I wanted to hit, that, you know, what do I love about this fight most, the potential for action, all that great stuff. Well, how about just the fact that, like, wake up, whether you're a hater or a lover of Izzy, and you've sort of been a day one-ish guy on recognizing certain things about him with your film work. Shout out to Dissected, a decent show, not enough BC in it, as always. But wake up, guys. Adesanya's on the way to becoming an all-time great, right? Like, if there's any active fighter, Luke, who isn't there yet in that GOAT conversation, and I'm not saying he's one win away. Like, look, he's in his prime. Let's see what happens. But he's angling toward that GOAT conversation. I'm sorry. You're seeing transcendent all-time great skills, and you're seeing a guy who I'm not sure yet we know how great he can be. Gastelum made him show extra gears and pour it out. And remember, he's the guy coming out in that fifth round. He's the guy finishing strong. So I see him literally on a path to becoming potentially, you know, competing with Silva for the title of greatest middleweight and competing in that vaunted upper room table of five or six people. Yet Costa's as legitimate a guy who could get him out of there in the first three rounds, because that's what happens in MMA. If somebody can take it on the chin and keep coming, which Costa can, and just explode on you, I mean, that's why you want to see this, because he can completely derail what is angling up to be. And look, I talked to Izzy again. I said, what about the whole idea of being on beat? He said, look, I've lost in kickboxing before. I don't
you
care about that.
You got a fly on your face.
It's, well, oh,
there we go.
Yeah,
that's a big ass fly, bro. God damn.
God, can we, you know, please, can we get that fly COVID tested, please? All right, thank you. Thank you very much. I just mean that, you know, it doesn't seem to matter to him. He's lost before, but wake up. In MMA, he's building something, and the eraser has a chance to, you know, his body is a wonderland, and he has a chance to come in there and just wipe that all over.
You know, it's interesting. I was looking at, it depends how you define greatness. So if you look at the other champions that would be at middleweight in contention, obviously Silva, runaway best, no doubt about it. As good as Adesanya has been, got a long way to go before you match what Silva has done. Okay, so he's number one. But then it gets really complicated.
Let me tell you this. During the quarantine on CBS Sports, we went division by division in UFC history. And, you know, our staff, Brandon Wise, Brent Brookhouse, and myself, and sort of Jack Crosby, sort of voted and ranked the greatest top 10 in history in every division. Middleweight for number two was the hardest debate
Correct.
By far.
Correct.
Because you don't want to say Weidman. But then you look at that run Weidman had of two Silva wins and Machida and Belfort and, you know, packaged all together. And you're like, well, that's pretty damn strong.
Right.
And then everybody else who you're – brain is telling you should be ahead of him, they got a little bit of holes, you know, they don't
and
have
so maybe the other ones would be like Rich Franklin, and okay, he did well, but the only two major wins were Evan Tanner and Nate Quarry.
It was early,
so that doesn't really count. Rockhold couldn't really hold on to it.
But Rockhold's got some spectacular wins, but not enough of them
as champion. That's the key. So he doesn't have that one there. Bustamante is, to me, one of the most underrated and under respected fighters, frankly, in MMA history, but his length of service there doesn't really count, so that doesn't really do it. I'm forgetting somebody, I'm sure, but Dave Manet certainly involved in that conversation to a degree. But,
not really.
Yeah, at the back end
footnote
of it.
Footnote in history.
Well, that's only because you're a hater. But the point being is, if Adesanya gets a win here, to me it puts him number two. Because then you would have – you have yes, because then it would have – the thing is, here's what he doesn't have. Like Michael Bisping, for example, held the belt, I think, for like almost 800 or so days. But – he only really defended it against Dan Henderson, who didn't deserve that title shot at all. So the question is, like, how you measure it. Length of service measures, I should say, counts. But to me, if you've beaten, let's see, he beat Gastelum to get the interim title. Then he beat, who did he beat? Romero?
He beat Silva first.
So, no, he beat Whitaker. Then he beat Romero.
I mean, like, the Whitaker win is massive,
it's massive
the way he did
and
it.
And he just stomped on him. And then if he beats Costa, and again, we're talking about in a non-controversial way, that's better than Franklin's run. That's better than Weidman's run. That's better than Bustamante's run. That's better than anybody else's
run. You
know who's
got a sneaky claim? You know who's got a sneaky claim in this argument? And my CBS brethren tried to crap all over me. Maybe it's their dislike of TRT. Vitor Belfort. If you let the 2013 Mohawk run be in the middle of that, Dan Hendo, Luke Rockhold in his debut, and
as champion?
And Michael Bisping. Well, not as champion, but those wins are strong as balls. They're violent. Yeah. They're quick. They're early. Maybe a little tainted, probably, definitely.
I mean, no one is more pro-steroids than me, and even I don't take that argument seriously.
I know he's done other things at light heavyweight and heavyweight. Yeah. So, you know, if you just go, but you're right. Does it matter more if it happened as champion? Yes. But, Luke, in history, outside of Anderson Silva, who has held the belt for multiple defenses? Very little. I think that's why Weidman probably ends up winning.
We'll do a couple more questions on this, and I want to move along to the co-main. Very quickly, biggest weakness both guys have?
I think the potential for Costa straight up is stamina, and I think it's the fact that he's a little bit more one direction, one dimensional. I mean, I'm not like, look, you can't get to this point without having wrinkles, and he can do different things, the head kicks, he can, you know, body attack and all that. But you know, he's going to come straight line, right? He's going to come at you like that.
Pretty much.
So that mixed with the potential stamina dump is going to be a problem. Izzy, here's the thing, Luke. We haven't seen a major hole. His takedown defense against different guys has been very strong, and What's the biggest weakness is the fact that he's facing a finisher and that facing a guy who, if he hits you and lands clean, it could be over no matter who you are.
Right.
I think that's the biggest weakness. But I think that's why he's the betting favorite in a great and close fight on paper. And that's why, at the end of the day, I can't not go for Izzy in this one.
I think the biggest weakness is that for Izzy, it's not a weakness so much as it's just a threat that Costa poses to everybody. People want to say that because Costa has less technique, that there's some kind of greatness inertia that will carry Adesanya forward. And yes, skills do on balance win fights. I am picking Adesanya to win for those very reasons. But dude, if there is any sport where just muscle-bound power and will and a good chin, which by the way Costa has, when that services you, it's MMA, much more so than boxing, much more so. You can get much further in MMA. The gloves are smaller. There's more weapons. There's just so much more you can do. If you are a physical marauder in the way that Costa is, you can literally win world titles that way. It's not an exaggeration.
I mean, I always said crap on Matt Serra's 11-7 career record, and he's in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame for different reasons. But,
right. You
know, yeah, in any big title fight against anybody, you know, we always say puncher's chance in boxing, but you have a lot bigger of a one-strike chance in MMA. Do you think, by the way, can I just ask you quickly, because you're a big Adesanya guy like me, takedown defense is strong. Do you think, though,
Adesanya?
Yeah. Do you think his lack, though, of wrestling prowess and proven submission game at this record will eventually catch up to him?
Probably. You know, there's a reason I think St. Pierre sort of regressed to the mean, what I mean to say is, there's a reason why he went with a style of fighting that controls the variables of chaos much more readily. And I think if you don't do that, it's only a matter of time. And that would be true. I mean, it was true of Anderson Silva. You stand long enough. Oh, it was an accident the first time. Okay, let's run it back. Then you break your shin. Dude, that's just kind of where the game is.
Silva lost those two fights. Weidman didn't win them. And you'll understand that one day on your deathbed, and I'll be there.
Yeah, well, it's you're going to be waiting a long time. One last note about Costa. We only have one fight where he went all three rounds, okay? Interesting note. People are like, oh, his offense dropped off a cliff. No, his defense dropped off a cliff, okay? Romero landed. These are significant strikes. First round, he landed 32. Second round, 40. Third round, 53. So you see it goes up each round. Here's Costa's numbers landing. 37, round one. 37, round two. 44, round three. His stayed level and then increased a little bit as well. So what you find with Costa is, at least for the first three rounds, his numbers don't drop off. But what I think happens is, one, opponents hit him more, and two, he lands as much or more, but not with the same ferocity. Like, he can make contact, but it's those first 8-9 minutes where I think he's a real serious hardcore threat. After that, I think Adesanya is probably going to have his way if the fight ends.
He's
going
to stop
that long.
Him in round four, Luke.
Think
That's
so?
What's going to happen, okay?
All right, so let's go to the co-main event.
I know you don't like to make predictions. You don't like to be wrong.
I don't like to lie to the audience.
You don't like to be exposed. Well, it's not like you're saying, you know, I'll retire if this is wrong. You're just saying who you think is going to win.
You couldn't possibly know who's
going
to win.
Bro, why don't you have the balls, to outside of wiping yourself, to take a stand on this?
Because
you'll take a stand on social issues.
You equate it to having guts. I equate it to parading knowledge you couldn't possibly have. You are out there being like, I am going to tell you the weather in 2021.
Because,
no, you're not.
Look, that's our job, okay?
No, it's not. Our job is not to tell the audience fuckboy things. Our job is to give them what the conditions are. You can lean certain ways because you can't ignore probabilities, but you have to have a much more balanced conversation.
When I sneak up on you and put that rear naked in, it's a tap or nap dilemma for you, and you're like, I never thought this skinny guy could squeeze that hard, you'll regret this debate right here.
Skinny guy. Okay. Let's move on to the co-main event, if we can. You know what, BC? People are hating on this fight, and I really don't understand it. Listen, is it the glamour of the main event? No. Do we wish that it was someone, you know, maybe trying to take the fight to John Jones, a rematch, let's say, with Dominic Reyes? Yeah, we probably do. Dude, it's a perfectly good fight. It's kind of interesting. You got a guy in Jan Blachowicz, discredited, and including by me, throughout the entirety of his career, has consistently gotten better. A guy like Dominic Reyes, who has entered the game kind of late, I would say has a much more modern game. I'm not saying that you should take your pants off and, like Petey Pablo, whip them around your head like a helicopter. Remember that song from the aughts?
No, I don't.
Well, it's because it was an African-American guy. But here's my point.
I have a lot of black friends. Tons of them.
So many black friends. But here's my point I'm trying to make. It's a great fight. I don't know what – you don't have to make it something that it's not, but what it is perfectly good.
I just think our knee-jerk reaction, because we saw Dom Reyes almost beat John Jones, and maybe you thought he did, was that Blachowicz is a step down. So this is UFC's way of crowning Dom Reyes. You know, he's going to go in there, do what he has to do, and let the Dom Reyes era begin, which is, by the way, is not a bad landing for the UFC when the greatest of all time exits a division that he has dominated through multiple personal issues and kept the train moving. Thank you, DC, for carrying the ball in the meantime of that. But the closer this fight gets, the more I like Blachowicz's chances. Yes, he's a rightful underdog. Yes, it's more of a puncher's chance. But look, he's really patient. Sometimes to a fault. You remember that Jacare fight that was just shit.
Yeah,
that was your moment to shine in the main event. He chose to just keep the chains moving, and he kind of got lucky with the split decision win. But what that did show me is he's not going to gas himself. He's not going to put himself in bad places. And he'll retain, since he's gone the five-round distance before and proven it, he'll retain a chance to win this fight between the start and the finish point at any point, if it's going to go the distance. It's up to Reyes to do Reyes things to win. He should win. He's the quicker, better striker, more craft, all that, and then some, tall, pale, and handsome. But, Luke, what if Reyes has already crowned himself? What if Reyes is looking to make a giant splash? If I'm Reyes' team, I say, look, let's be boring, let's be safe, let's win this fight, and then we can start the right after this, because you know, ever since Jan has been going into that forest and touching the noose of the man who hung himself, he's been given the dark source spiritual powers in that left hook.
You know that's not real.
No, but it's weird, right?
It is certainly weird. Here's an interesting thing about Blachowicz. Listen to this. So since 2017, he lost to Patrick Cummings. He actually lost to Gustafson and Patrick Cummings.
He lost to that barista? Are you serious?
He did lose to the barista. But hold on, listen to this. So since then, he beat Devin Clark, very good wrestler, submitted him inside two. Beat Jared Cannonier. Beat Jimmy Manoa.
Damn.
Submitted Nikita Krylov. Now, he lost to Thiago Santos. Okay, that's no shame there. KO'd Luke Rockhold. Beat Jacare. The fight sucked, but he did win. And then he KO'd Corey Anderson, who had previously beaten him. During that time, he got 1, 2, 3, 4 performance of the night bonuses and a fight of the night bonus. Dude, that's a hell of a run. That's a run to be respected. That's a run to take seriously.
He's confident. He's good on the ground. He's not bad. He's really. Not,
well, remember, really? Against Corey Anderson took him down and just controlled him for three rounds. This time, Corey Anderson couldn't do fuck all to him.
So my point is, he may not look great. He may not be winning rounds, but he will be in a position to win the fight should Reyes give him that chance.
The odds on this one, they've got Reyes around, depending where you look, let's say minus 270. They've got Blachowicz at a plus 240, so a fairly significant favorite for Reyes. You agree with that?
Yes, because of the skills. If he just says, I'm going to focus on boxing, mixed body shots, you know, use my speed. Look, he surprised us against John, correct? John Jones, in terms of his elusiveness and his aggressive. I mean, look.
Surprised you, Bama.
The whole package of boxing that he showed, that this wasn't the Volkan Uzdemir fight. But if Blachowicz can play the role of Vulcan, and I'm not talking about knock people out in a Fort Lauderdale drinking establishment, I'm just talking about be the bigger man. Maybe allow the fight to happen on his terms on the inside. Be a clinch war. I think that's where Jan's going to hang around, Luke. I don't think he can win a decision, though. He's going to have to get the KO.
Here's where it's going to get interesting. Reyes's game is more modern. He started MMA later and has just all the best practices that come with they didn't teach him all the old things that don't really matter anymore. Blachowicz still has some of that. He's a little bit more of like the standard Muay Thai striker. He's more than that, obviously, but he has a lot of that still left in him. Reyes, his whole game is built on motion. The whole idea is if I can get somebody in motion, through that motion I can be elusive and I can create offensive openings against Blachowicz. To the extent that Reyes is fresh, That's a problem for Blachowicz. Here's the problem. He fell off a fucking cliff into the championship rounds against John Jones, and Jones chewed his ass up. You already talked about the fact that Blachowicz is patient, bro, and he's tough and he's durable, and he has fought every kind of fighter, including ones that have more modern skill sets, and more often than not got his hand raised. To me, the later this one goes, much more favors Blachowicz.
Because Blachowicz, like, he's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment, right? He's just a solid dude. Not spectacular in that lack of spectacularness, right? Like, not walking down Jacare and trying to make a statement. It's never going to make him a star, but you don't have to try to make yourself a star. You win the title, you become a star. Can't wait to see if this fight gets there, what those final rounds look like.
A couple of small notes from the card. Juan Espino, who's been out for almost 2 years after winning Ultimate Fighter, he is back. He's from the Canary Islands, which, by the way, I didn't know this. This is the part of Spain where they don't say the S as a th. Did you know that? Or the C as a th.
Unlike you, I'm really not, you know, blown away by Latin and Spanish pronunciations of things, you know?
Including their own, including their
whatever,
own languages.
Bro. Okay, whatever. All right.
Spain is maybe the greatest country on earth. I just want to point
that
out.
I've never been there. You know where I've been?
Together we're going to go.
USA, okay?
Yeah, it's a great place to.
All right.
We're going to go to Spain together, and I'm going to blow your mind. Anyway, he's back in this fight, this card, rather. Let's see. You've got, one fight I like, opening the pay-per-view main card.
Yes.
Hakeem Duwato taking on Zubaira Tugugov.
Okay, so Zubaira, he's had some great wins, especially that one up in the octagon after UFC 229.
He's tough as balls.
He got some punches in. I think he's untapped. Like he has a large ceiling. We're going to find out. What has he done so far in the octagon?
So he has he's been fighting in the octagon since 2014. Remember, he had a bit of a suspension and some time off. I think he had some USADA issues, if memory serves. He
beat hasn't, right? Who out of all of us, right?
I know. He beat Douglas Silva de Andrade, Ernest Chavez. That guy fought in the UFC, didn't know. Felipe Nover, he got a win over. Then he lost to Hanato Moicano via split, but there's no shame there. Had a draw against Lerone Murphy in September of 2019. Then in February, came back and viciously KO'd Kevin Aguilar.
Duwato has the all or nothing, I'm going to come in there and KO you type thing.
A bit, yeah. He's very, very good. I think he was on World Series of Fighting for a long time.
He's going to run himself into a loss here. All right?
He has some wins. He had wins over Steven Seiler. He's got wins over Austin Arnett, Kyle Bochniak, and then Julio Arce as a split decision.
Can I stereotype you? When in doubt in modern MMA, you've said this before, if a Russian guy shows up with an Abraham Lincoln beard, bet on him.
Yeah, pretty much. They got a Z and a V in her name and an Amish beard.
Yes, yes.
That guy is not to be trifled with.
He's angry. He's going to win. Thank you.
All right, so let me ask you this. Well, before we stop talking about this card, give me one storyline or fight, independent of what we've already talked about, that you got your eye on for UFC 253.
Look, I don't like the name Kai Kara France. I've sort of been get this guy away from me. It just weirds me out. But
yeah, I mean, another culture, right? I mean, who, yeah, you got
why
some
would
nerve,
I like
huh?
that? As a flyweight, though, he's putting some wins together. He's starting to look pretty damn good. He's from the damn city kickboxing. I don't know if it's like everybody who steps in there, magically becomes a great fighter, although Brad Riddell also on this card is looking very good as well. But who's he going in there against? He's going in there against
Kai Kara France?
Yeah.
Brandon Royval.
And Royval, if you remember, just had that somewhat spectacular submission over Tim Elliott, and he looked great in there. This is going to be an interesting fight. With a win here, if he can get it, I think we're going to have to start talking about Kai Kara in the damn title picture, in the larger picture.
Remember,
and flyweight's heating up.
He was on that season of the Ultimate Fighter when they did the championship flyweight season. So he, on the regional scene, has already been quite decorated. He's trying to get to that next level.
For me, Sarge Eubanks turning around on like one day notice?
Super fast against Ketlin Vieira. She got her hands full, too. Yes, but I will say this. Sarge Eubanks, so she started out with Team Lloyd Irvin, so I knew her from the D.C. area. And she was a gi and no-gi jiu-jitsu competitor, and she was well-known.
World-class.
Absolutely. She was a force to be reckoned with. And then I don't know how she ended up with the East Coast Super Friends, Ricardo Almeida and Mark Henry up in the New Jersey. And at first it was a little bit trying to figure her game out. She's gotten pretty good, dude. She's on quite the run.
I thought moving up in weight was gonna ruin her.
No, it
but
didn't
she's,
at
it's
all.
It's working out well.
So Ketlin Vieira is no one to be trifled with, but that should be a fun fight at women's bantamweight. The one I've got my eye on is the one where you have the biggest lopsided odds. Diego Sanchez is on this card, taking on Jake Matthews. And here's the thing about this fight, which I think has got my attention. You look at this, you say to yourself, how old is Jake Matthews? He's still in his 20s. He's 26 years old. 26 years old, and he has how many fights? He's got 20 fights. He's 16-4. He just beat Emael Weber Mech in February of 2020, and before that, Rostam Akhmon at 243, although he did lose to Anthony Rocco Martin. However, Rocco Martin's pretty good, okay?
Kayla Harrison's male friend, right?
They may not be together anymore.
Wow.
I gotta see about
all
that.
Right. Check your DMs, Kayla.
Please don't be weird. Here's what's the interesting part about this. The odds have Matthews at a minus 750. They've got Diego sitting at plus 525. It's like a boxing main event, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it's lopsided. If there is anyone who has shown a capacity to collapse under expectations, it's Jake Matthews. Now, that's a little bit unfair because, hello, he's got 20 fights and he's still just 26 years old. This is the part of his career where he should be really be moving into solidifying, not his status per se, but what kind of future he might be able to have. He should make short work, easy work, of Diego Sanchez. Is he going to?
I hope he does. And I don't mean that against Diego, but I don't want to keep seeing Diego take punishment. And I'm almost scared by this little run that he's on. He got the DQ win against Michelle Pineda, which, you know, was kind of lame. He didn't really deserve.
Yep.
And, you know, look, I'll give him credit for that Mickey Gall win where you know, you wanted to count him out. But I don't know. At some point, there's going to be nothing left in there. What's his coach's name, your buddy there?
He hit me up again, by the way. Joshua Fabia.
Joshua Fabia. Hopefully Joshua Fabia.
He wanted to do another interview.
Has had the crystals out and the incense, and hopefully they're snorting someone's dead remains, and I think that's how they prepare for a fight. I don't know if it'll be good enough, but did you see him doing the weird things in the airport on the Embedded
show?
Yeah,
that's the least of my concerns with Diego, is doing Monty Python silly walks in the airport and waiting for his flight. I don't care about that. Yeah, Fabia hit me up and was like, I want to do another interview, but the only condition is it has to be live. Meanwhile, these two dudes DM me after the interview I did with them on SiriusXM, telling me I was the problem. You know, I was the one who was making them look bad. I'm like, I'm pretty sure, fellas, I'm not the guy that did that. Just to be clear,
check
about
yourself.
It.
By the way, you got to tell the people how badly you've sweat up that dress shirt on that.
Oh, I'm like Patrick. Who was the guy? You remember when Patrick Ewing would dunk at the Garden, and then he would go to the side of the court? They still have them now, but I remember like they had to have four of them joints. They have the guys with the huge brooms, and they would soak up all the sweat.
Yes.
Yeah, I need that. I'm sweating like a whore in church. All right.
And I make weird references, please.
All right. Okay. So with that in mind, and by the way, this will be the there's two pay-per-views next month, or I should say, no, sorry, 254 is in October. So we're not in October yet.
Which is, what is 254? Is that the Habib one?
Yeah, that will be at the afternoon time. So it'll be evening time in Abu Dhabi.
And that night. Gervonta Davis against Leo Santa Cruz.
Showtime just keeps trying to go up head-to-head with
Well, they're not going head-to-head. That's going to be at night, all right?
Ah, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. Good point.
Get the damn Mohegan, all right?
Still, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of ducats to figure out if you like both sports. All right, speaking of both sports, BC, here we are. This is the part where our audience dreads. They love boxing talk here on Morning Combat. But in all seriousness, this is just a hell of a card.
Yeah, they better wake up and realize that this is a hardcore boxing fan's dream
right.
to see two stars in the Charlos in legitimately, arguably, the toughest test of their careers.
Also, here's the thing. If MMA taught me anything, it taught me to like amateur wrestling. Not to the degree that I love MMA, but it gave me a respect. It gave me a healthy respect, obviously, for jiu-jitsu, for boxing, for kickboxing. I don't like them, as I mentioned, I don't like them all the same. But, dude, boxing is great, and not because it's great because it's different than MMA. There are obviously numerous similarities, but there are also things you can appreciate about one sport that it doesn't offer for the other, and vice versa. MMA offers things to you that boxing cannot, and vice versa. For me, when you have a super compelling back-and-forth 12-round main event, there's just more story arc to follow than in a 5-round main event. But at the same time, a blood and guts 5-round war like Lawler versus Condit, you just don't see kind of...
Lawler McDonald was better, just two.
It was a better fight, but it wasn't a better melee. I think that's the part. A 5-round fight that you're going to say was a better melee? Really? Where Lawler ends up stopping McDonald? That's a better melee versus the one that did not and then changed both
Some
their careers?
Some people don't even consider Lawler Condit an all-time great action fight.
Yeah, well, it's because they're stupid. Who cares what they think? In any event, speaking of action fights, we're at the home of Gotti versus Ward. We're here for the Charlo brothers.
Yes, we are. Shout out to Connecticut, right? My state. My people, okay?
So here's how it goes, BC. Two main events. One card will start at 7 p.m. in the East. There'll be an intermission where BC and I will host that show. Then there'll be a 10 p.m. I'm guessing roughly a 10 p.m. show start time.
I don't know.
It will entirely depend on how the first card goes, basically. Let's just say, for all intents and purposes, a 10 p.m. start time. And what will happen there is the second card will happen. Each of those cards is headlined by one of the Charlo brothers. Let's start with the first card, because to me, that's the one I'm actually most interested in terms of the main event itself.
Okay, okay.
Jermall Charlo, who is technically the bigger of the brother. Don't tell Jermall Charlo that. He'll ream you out on Facebook,
Instagram. As Jermall said the other day, I'm older by one long minute. He's trying to stretch that out. Jermall's trying to close that gap and be the alpha of the group.
I rewatched Jermall going apeshit on Instagram.
Yes, over his brother. Yes.
Jesus Christ, he lost his mind about it. Okay, but he is at 160 pounds, Jermall 150. Jermall at 154. So he's going up against Sergey Derevyanchenko. I love this fight. We've already talked about it. It's the toughest test of Jermall's career.
Put it in layman's terms for the MMA fans.
Watch you do the form. Explain it. Help them understand what is at stake. What are the roles people are playing?
All right. In general, here's the Charlos, 30-year-old twin brothers, both world champions, brash, unapologetic, and they fight that way too. Equal parts boxing, speed, and power and athleticism and big surge. Both Charlos don't throw a ton of punches, but they're very efficient, and they look for that finishing blow, and they typically get it. What Jermall's going to do here, he had won a title at 54, moved up to middleweight. Because of boxing's political landscape, had some knockouts and nice wins, but hadn't welcomed an elite foe. Now he has it in Derevyanchenko. Who's Sergey Derevyanchenko? Ukrainian. Giant amateur career. Turns pro here. 34 years old. And in just 12, 13 pro fights, has already pushed two of the best middleweights of the last decade, Danny Jacobs and Gennady, to the absolute limit, falling just short by split or close unanimous decision. So, Luke, it's going to come down to this. Jermall's the bigger fighter against Derevyanchenko. He's going to have a speed advantage. He's going to have a power advantage. But what Derevyanchenko does so great, combining the footwork of that Ukrainian amateur system, getting inside, and once he's inside, letting go with punches, but not in a reckless brawl sort of way, more in a confined, clean, and accurate punches. But the more you do that against a sniper like Jermall Charlo, the more you're going to set up combustion. And while Derevyanchenko has come so close against Golovkin and Jacobs but couldn't sway the judges, I don't know exactly. He's going to be the toughest test to date for Jermall. But how does he win this fight? That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
He's going to have to suffocate Jermall. He's going to have to force Jermall to throw even less than he normally does. Because, look, among active middleweights, according to CompuBox, Sergey Derevyanchenko attempts the most amount of punches per round. Jermall attempts the least amount of active middleweights.
Right.
So he's got to keep that number down low by landing, by getting inside, and by giving Jermall something to think about. Eventually, Jermall's going to line him up and counter. We've seen Derevyanchenko. He can get knocked down, but he can get back up. This is going to be very fun.
Let me ask you this.
Because it's not going to be a scientific boxing match. Right? Sergey's going
to
get inside.
To an extent, it has to be if you're Charlo. You're not going to out-guts Derevyanchenko. You're not going to outgrind Derevyanchenko. He's not built for that. Here's my question. Let's say Charlo wins fifth round KO. What does that do for his career? What kind of opportunities is Charlo lined up for if he scores a victory that emphatic against an opponent that good?
He leaps to the stratosphere of the division, which means you're ready for the giant pay-per-view matchups, the kind, Luke, to be honest, that cross over to different networks and promoters. Like, how do we get the people on the other side of the street in here? Normally, it's by becoming such a big star that people
have to make it.
The demand is so big. So if he is able, and it's in play, for Derevyanchenko to get inside on him, but Charlo land the boom. And again, we don't know if Charlo's a bigger puncher than Gennady or Danny Jacobs. We have to see him on the elite level to find out. If he can do that, and if he can use names afterwards in the microphone angrily, like, hey, Canelo, right? Hey, Canelo Alvarez, come see me. That's when we're going to start banging that drum. He already believes he's the best middleweight in the world, and he might be. But if he beats Sergey Derevyanchenko, he's going to have a very strong stance because Jacobs moved up. Canelo is floating, right, between 60 and 75. Golovkin's kind of on the way out of the sport.
Right.
There's an opening right there.
Now, obviously, if Derevyanchenko wins, this would be against Jacobs, fell short, against Triple G, fell short. I remember watching that live. I think it was on DAZN. Again, there's so many Triple G fanboys were like, no way, wasn't that close. At a bare minimum, folks, that fight was close. I scored it for Derevyanchenko, but okay, at a bare minimum.
Savage.
He pushed him to the limits. It was ridiculous.
There's still pieces of Sergey's face on the floor at Madison Square Garden.
I mean,
right?
What does Triple G do? He backs you up against the ropes and Derevyanchenko was doing that to him multiple stretches of that fight. So if he wins, third time's a charm, does it transform Derevyanchenko's career? It certainly must, right?
Oh, it has to. It has to. And he's like the elite uncrowned champion of this division. But, you know, if you come up short three times against the three best fighters, You know, that might be the end. He's 34 years old. Right. So, you know, one thing we're not talking about.
I want the green belt.
He fought his face off. Literally, his face fell off, Nicolas Cage, against Gennady. I know that was last fall, but, like,
scar tissue.
Sometimes you lose the ghost in one night, right? Sometimes you pour whatever is left in you. I know he's had a small pro career, but 34, he's had a long career when you consider the amateur. You have to wonder if the damage, whatever, he's in there against a bigger fighter. It's going to be an uphill climb, but he is in play. He is in this fight. Jermall has never seen this level of skill and aggression together, so can't freaking wait. I'm spitting all
over.
So
then there's going to be the intermission, which he and I will take over. And then we go to the second card. Jermell Charlo will be taking on Jason Rosario. To me, this one is interesting, but for different reasons. I personally, and I could be totally wrong about this, I don't view Rosario as quite the challenge that I do for Derevianchenko, although I take seriously that he's got two belts that are not necessarily an accident. But Jermell Charlo is considered by boxing insiders of the two brothers to be the one that's a little bit more technically sophisticated, maybe the better pure boxer of the two. He got the early start with Golden Boy when Jermall did not, right? So I think he had like double-digit fights as a pro before Jermall ever really got in there. Okay, set the scene for us there. Jermall, a little bit chattier of the two, by the way, between the two brothers as well. What is he looking for here? Really, it's got to be the title unification aspect.
Yeah, obviously, look, 154 is the deepest division in the sport. It really is. You may have bigger stars at welterweight, but top to bottom, when we have names like Lara, J-Rock, Jared Hurd, on and on, it's so freaking deep. Tony Harrison's another one. The winner of this fight will have three of four belts. So you're talking about the power player in the division. I think collectively we all agree. Jermell Charlo split the fights with Tony Harrison but knocked him out in the rematch. He's your number one sort of pound-for-pound best super welterweight, junior middleweight, whatever you want to say, at 154. So he should be favored, and he will be. He's the better counterpuncher. He's got the better craft. He's quick and all that. But that unknown factor about what Banana brings to the table, Jason Rosario, what makes this fight so fun. I've said it before. I said it again. We don't know how great Rosario is. Jermell sure don't know. And even Jason doesn't know why.
Right.
Because he's 25, and he only had his first real training camp ever as a pro fighter 20 fights into his career against Julian Williams in January when he upset him by knockout. So this is a guy who's kind of just coming into his own. Very small resume at the very top. Is that a one great night against J-Rock? Is it fool's gold because J-Rock's a great fighter, but we've seen Jermall Charlo send him to hell in a close fight as well with a big knockout. Is it a little bit of fool's gold, or is Jason Rosario feeling himself and finding out who he is? The thing I love most about Banana is that he told me, I'll box 12 rounds if I have to, if Charlo makes me. But I want to go to war. That's what I do. I've got a big banana right here for him. He didn't say right here. He said right here, brother. And it's got Jermell's chin waiting for it. I cannot wait to see what happened, Luke.
Will you put that down and stop being weird? Now you broke the desk, fucker.
When he lands on Jermell's chin, I do think the more aggressive Rosario is, he will speed up his own exit. I do like Jermell by knockout, but I will break this set to show you how excited I am for this
fight. If you actually go and look at the fight that Banano lost, yeah, they're begging us not to break
the
set.
What are you going
to
do? What are you going to do? All right?
Give you a better haircut? We're going to give you a better haircut.
Look at Jay in my ear. You know what I'm saying?
Here's the point.
Jay, come see me. Come see me, bro. All
Who
right?
was it? Was it the Gallimore fight that he lost?
Gallimore. Yeah.
If you actually, I went and watched that fight. He was playing the inside game with that opponent for the entirety of it. Now he ended up losing, but he tried. He can't do it like Derevianchenko can do it to Jermall. He's not that sophisticated a player. So he actually might get – there's a lot of ways he could end up in – can you worry about that in a minute? Can we make this point without you being distracting there, IKEA? Stop for just a moment, please. Thank you. Yes, leave it. Quit fucking around.
Hey, Jay, why don't you F off?
All right. Well, I was going to make a point, but who cares anymore? I mean, there you go. Anything else in the card people should care about there, fucko?
It's a loaded undercard. We're going to wrap. Four fights. Look, the 122 division is going to be on parade here with three fights, two for titles, one featuring former champions. You may come out talking a lot about Luis Neri, 25-year-old softball from Mexico, one of the biggest punchers in the game.
Big power.
You talk about Banana, he's got a hammer in this left hand, all right?
So as we mentioned, there's two main events, six fights total. If you discount the main events, as he indicated, there's four other fights, right? Three of those are 122. The last of those is going to be John Rael Casimiro at 118, so just one weight class down against Duke Micah. I have tried. I said this on the weigh-in show. The presser. I have tried to verify this dude's record. Wikipedia says he's got 15 fights all in Africa. Some sites say he has 24 fights. I can't find it. BoxRec doesn't say it. Either way, I do believe this is his U.S. debut, and as I said before, his average...
We can ask him. I mean, you know,
we'll ask him. His average output in terms of like how long a fight lasts is 5.5 rounds. He might be in for a wake-up call on Saturday night. I don't think that fight is going to go 5.5 rounds, unless...
Well, Casemiro's a very... This is a great fight. Casemiro's a very late starter.
Right.
6 of his 20 knockouts in the 10th round or later. He doesn't throw enough punches, but he's tough as balls. By the way, 4 fighters in Filipino history have won titles in 3 divisions. Manny Pacquiao, Donny Nietes, Nonito Donaire... You know, this guy, John Real Casemiro, is putting together 14 wins in a row, a very good career. This is going to be a good fight, okay? Get ready.
Okay.
Don't go to the bathroom, okay?
Are you going
to
break anything else?
I'm done.
Besides my will to do the show?
We're good here? No,
let me say goodbye properly. Okay, so let's plug this. So in about an hour, we are going to be back on Showtime or the YouTube channel for the weigh-ins for this event.
11 Eastern.
Then... what are we doing later today? We're going to do another Room Service Diaries sometime
this
evening.
Yeah, check us out on CBS Sports HQ, by the way. Later today, we'll be live at 6 o'clock. We got our third and final Room Service Diaries later tonight. We're going to film.
And then tomorrow is the big day, the pay-per-view. We will be the intermission show between the first Charlo and second Charlo cards. Yeah? All right. If you want to try Showtime, you certainly can. Go to Showtime.com right now for a 30-day free trial. Please do that. By the way, we've got a lot of places you can catch us on social, BC. He's got an Instagram. I've got an Instagram. He's got a Twitter. I've got a Twitter. And now Morning Combat has a Twitter and a YouTube page, obviously, and a Instagram, all of them with the same name. Makes it very simple, unlike me and BC, who have 1,000 different names for each of our accounts. And by the way, this is live. You can go to youtube.com/morningcombat. The vanity URL works. Did you know that?
No, I don't know what that means, but I had a great time with you guys.
As opposed to like X257ZZ31.
Johnson Rods, Nerd Bombers. You always
YouTube.com.
Like, hey, BC, why do you think this light looks blue? It's because of the technological advance, you know.
Why learn about how things work? All right. Like desks. All right, that is BC. I am Luke Thomas from CBS Sports. We'll see you guys about an hour for the weigh-ins. Until then, may all of your gains be loyal.